Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The coronavirus pandemic has left Native American reservations, including Pine Ridge in South Dakota, with a shortage of medical, food, and household supplies. The Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation is using an online fundraising platform to innovatively meet the need. Tatewi Means is the organization's executive director, and she joins us now. Welcome back to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Hi, it's good to be here. Thank you for having us today.
Take us back a little bit before we talk about some of the efforts that are happening now to the work Thunder Valley CDC was doing before the pandemic. And then when we started learning about what was happening globally and what would inevitably come to South Dakota, how you had to sort of pivot or broaden the way you were thinking about what kind of services you needed to do. Let's start there.
Right. So our organization is a grassroots community-based organization in the Pine Ridge Reservation here in South Dakota. And we're well over 10 years old in existence. But, you know, our story started many years before that. Our roots are very much connected to our Lakota identity, spirituality, our language, and our life ways, our culture. And so our vision as an organization is liberation. We want liberation for our Lakota people through our language, culture, and spirituality. Our movement has very much centered around the youth, connecting them to who we are as Lakota people. But we do it through a multitude of a multidisciplinary approach. It's multigenerational, it's multidisciplinary, and really takes aim at the social determinants of health that affect our communities. You know, so often Pine Ridge Reservation, other reservations here in South Dakota are known, are talked about, are referenced to for all of these disparaging statistics, you know, the high incidences of diabetes and suicidal ideations and substance abuse and, you know, all of those very hard realities, hard and harsh realities for our communities. But what we choose to focus on at Thunder Valley CDC is the hope that we have in our communities that have allowed us to be here for generations, you know, in spite of colonization and all of those effects of that. And so we very much focus on liberation, really in the process of defining what that means for our people collectively. You know, a lot of times when people talk about sovereignty or liberation for Indian nations, you think about tribal governments, that they are the holders or keepers of sovereignty. And that's not how we see it. We see it that every individual, the sovereignty starts within themselves. Once they have that sovereignty, they have that personal liberation that extends to their children, to their families, to their extended family, and then at some point their nation. So it creates this ripple effect of liberation that extends, you know, beyond the reach of one person or one family. And that's how you create the movement. That's how you create the liberation movement that will change the mindsets in our community. We have become accustomed to accepting reality for what it is. You know, this culture of poverty, it's pervasive in our communities. And so our work really takes aim at shifting those mindsets and that culture to one that is focused on hope and the possibilities of a liberated future. So we do that through 8 initiatives. One that is physical and can be seen by the eye is the actual construction of our 34 acres of a regenerative community development. And so we have single family homes, apartment building, a community center and bunkhouse, and plans to develop out the remaining acreage that we have there on the reservation. We have housing and home ownership, youth leadership, a workforce development program, Lakota language and education to build and design a total immersion school. We have total immersion Montessori child care centers and social enterprise to build and define community wealth across the 9 districts on the reservation. You know, so when I said it's multidisciplinary, we're all about creating various pathways for our people to connect to the work and ultimately to find healing. Because the first step of liberation, in our opinion, is healing. So how do you promote collective healing for an entire nation? That obviously starts with us and our work as a people, but it also takes allyship from those that are, you know, outside of the reservation, those that want to support, that are non-Indigenous, to really understand who we are, where we come from, but most importantly, where we're trying to go.
So let's talk about the fact that, you know, this SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19, you know, in the early days, we're learning about it, and it's a huge challenge that in some ways interrupts a lot of work that's being done, but also gives you an opportunity to stand within the infrastructure that you've already built and say, you know, the work that has gone into the, you know, the past 10 years, so the work that Thunder Valley has done, now all of a sudden is, you were awfully glad that it's here because now here's a new challenge. Talk to us a little bit about how that infrastructure you've been able to, you know, what's on hold, what's not being done, and then what is being done. So let's start with the pause. You know, how disruptive has this been to the work that you were already doing?
Right. So I think the biggest disruption right now is just on our staff. And, you know, the work family that we've built, we haven't had to we haven't been able to have all of our staff. And we have employed around 50. We have 50 employees as an organization. And so not being able to connect every day with staff has taken a toll on, you know, the work culture that we have. And, you know, we're not new. Everybody across the nation has experienced this and has been adjusting accordingly. But, you know, we complied with our tribal ordinance. It's a shelter in place ordinance that's still in effect. It went into effect in March. And there's no certain date as to when the tribe will lift that. And so to be respectful of tribal law, you know, we identified our essential staff that still have to go into office, the office to conduct business, but all of our staff is remote. And, you know, for an organization that has deep roots in community engagement and engaging our community face-to-face, we've really had to pivot and strategize on how to still engage our community, especially young people, especially our youngest relatives, in a way that's meaningful and that they can still, you know, reap the benefits of the work that we do. Some of the other things that are on hold, and unfortunately, as a nonprofit that, you know, is largely dependent on, you know, philanthropy and the trends in philanthropy, we don't really have the luxury of pausing other aspects of our work. And the reason for that is because there's still those needs in our community. You know, there's still gaps to fill. You know, we have a food sovereignty initiative where now more than ever we need locally produced and fresh organic produce and food. Today, you know, our staff are doing a buffalo kill that's traditional to Lakota people and harvesting that, you know, so that we can feed more families during this pandemic. And so it's just, it's not something that we could say it's either or, it's both and. And, you know, that takes a toll, too, on staff that's already at our capacity with time and resources. But a challenge in this pandemic is, you know, some grantors have pivoted their funding portfolios to focus solely on COVID. And so while we still need the programmatic support for all of our aid initiatives, we're also having to fundraise for COVID-specific relief. And so that's, you know, that's been a part of our funding strategies as well.
Let's talk about the partnership with Seventh Generation and some of the fundraising work that you're doing on the sort of new platforms, trying to find new partnerships or ways to make that pivot.
Right. So we've been really fortunate. You know, some of our longtime partners, in addition to Seventh Generation Foundation, so like Northwest Area Foundation, WEND Collective, the NB3, the Notabagé III Foundation out of New Mexico, and First Nations Development Institute have all provided Thunder Valley CDC with COVID-specific funding. Some of this funding has helped with elder distribution kits with food and supplies, personal protective equipment, being able to pay individuals that are willing to, you know, make these distributions because they are risking, you know, their own health, their family's health to provide this resource. And we don't operate in a silo. We work hand in hand with an Indigenous response team and network. It's a collective of individuals and small organizations, grassroots organizations on Pine Ridge that are really working to protect our communities. So it's nice to be able to support, you know, all the efforts that are happening because we have access to those resources. But specific to the Seventh Generation Foundation, they were willing to do, not only did they donate actual seventh generation products, so the cleaning products, the environmentally friendly and sustainable products that we were able to include in the elder distribution kits, but they also were willing to provide a matching campaign, dollar for dollar, for any money we raised specific to COVID relief and COVID response. So, you know, that launched a couple of weeks ago. It's still open. We're not actively promoting it on social media, but it's still open. It's still an operating campaign. But just very fortunate to have that partnership. And one of the things that an added benefit to that is the amplification of our work, the uplifting of, you know, our story as an organization, but also to the needs of our nation. And so it's reaching a broader audience. You know, Seventh Generation is based in Vermont. And so, you know, the reach of their customer, the customers that they serve, and, you know, other partners that they have are now becoming aware of the work on Pine Ridge that's happening in this situation, in this crisis, but then beyond that too.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to In the Moment on SDPB Radio. My guest is Tatewi Means. She's the executive director of Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation. And you mentioned earlier about the social determinants of health, and this has been a year, 2020, especially as we look at this pandemic, and then through some of the protests we saw after the death of George Floyd, where everyone across the country is talking about equity and talking about what that means beyond interactions with police, but what it means in housing and what it means in education and what it means in access to food. Does this also resonate with the work that you're doing and amplify that message in a way? Like, what has sort of watching that nationwide story unfold, what has that meant for you? How have you sort of processed it in you know, personally and through your work?
Well, it's for us at the org, and just speaking for me personally, like you said, it's kind of like finally, like a deep sigh and a finally, we're having these conversations on a national and international level where people are really talking about white supremacy and what is white settler colonialism, especially here in this country, because it's something we never talk about. It's never taught in schools. It's not a part of any regular curriculum. So be able to see these conversations happening all over the board is really exciting for us, especially as Indigenous people, because our story is so invisible. You know, we make up a smaller percentage nationally. In South Dakota, we're more around 10%. Our youth are actually around 15% of the state's population. And so, you know, we have the higher representation here in this state, but still our level of invisibility to our history and to our issues. And so to have that door open now, it's a great opportunity for organizations like ourselves to really highlight not only the resilience, but, you know, that liberation that we're working towards. You know, this conversation is about equity. That's why we focus so much around liberation, because it's taking the next step beyond equity, to have that freedom of thought, to have that. And in order to do that, you have to have an almost a decolonization process. And that has to include white individuals as well. We are all subject to and kind of chained to the vestiges of colonialism that still exist in this country, colonialism and capitalism. And until we all have healing from that and a decolonization process, those cycles, those systems that are inherently unjust will continue. They'll perpetuate. It's just the cycle. And it has to start with the youngest people in this country and in the school system, because that's where we raise people to think a certain way. That's where we raise them to process things a certain way. And so if we're not having those conversations openly and willing to hear the truths of all different races of people, you perpetuate those bad cycles.
We've talked about the youth, and I also want to mention elders and how important, you know, how risky this pandemic has been for them, what we know has happened in the Navajo Nation, what we know has happened in long-term care facilities across the nation to the elder population. With the work that you're doing with language and culture and spirituality and making these connections, these intergenerational connections, does it feel particularly urgent to you? And now we've seen 152 cases of COVID-19 in Oglala Lakota County, for example. Does it seem particularly urgent for you to protect those elders, because they are the keepers? Not only do we value them as individual humans, but they are also the keepers of so much of this culture still that is vital. Do you feel that sense of urgency on a daily basis?
Absolutely. And that is one thing that COVID has, I guess, highlighted or exacerbated is the need to put things in place for the protection of elders. It's something that's always on our mind, though, quite frankly, because, you know, the average life expectancy of our people, of males, is just over 50. And for females, you know, it's right around 50. And so not a very high life expectancy. And so the urgency to protect our elders has been there for generations. But the reality of COVID makes it even more important to find ways to get them their needs without having to expose them to too much. And a part of that is, you know, an education effort across the board. You know, a lot of the work at Thunder Valley came through our communications team and community engagement team to get information out there to the community about why is it important to social distance? Why is it important to wear your mask when you go? Even if nobody else is wearing a mask, why should you do it? Because you're going home to a home where grandma and grandpa are, right? Why should you be careful of who you're around? Because you don't want to get grandma and grandpa or your little brother and sister sick. So just raising that consciousness in our communities, it starts with education. And that's part of a liberated society, right? You can make all the laws and regulations you want, but ultimately it's everybody's individual choice whether or not to follow it. And so if you give people enough information and they'll make the right choice. That's what we have to believe. And so it's just a matter of giving out. And this is a former attorney general for the tribe talking. Ultimately, it comes down to everybody's choice. And so, you know, the goal is not to enhance a police state where you're restricting everybody's movements and thoughts and so on, but really just hoping that people have enough information to make the right choice. And that's all that we can hope for. But providing our elders. Yes.
Yeah, no, I was going to wrap up and let people know where they can find more information about Thunder Valley. Is Facebook online? Mm-hmm. What's the best way to get updated information on the work that you're doing?
Right. So we have a website, thundervalley.org. We have social media. We do have Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so all of the social media platforms. And then, of course, you can email any of us, but all of our emails are on the website. So those would be the best ways to get in touch and connected with our work.
Thank you so much for being here today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.